Okay. So good morning, welcome. This is a brand new set of Shiurim, 21st century halacha. It's based upon a series that my chaver, my chavrus, Rav Asher Bush put together. And he was kind enough to let me use the sources. So I want to go through, and I like this very much in the sense that it's as we spoke about on Shabbos, it's very practical, and it's timely. It's things that come up literally in our everyday life. In the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and other contemporary poskim point out that for people who, like the Mishnah Berurah says, they have only three or four hours a day to learn. That's all they have. You're working, you only have 3 or 4 hours a day to learn. So if you only have 3 or 4 days to learn, you should probably learn halacha, because that's what's good enough. Okay, so for us, balabatim, good morning. For who here you go, there's more. Who what's it called? I'm sorry, yeah, that's the last copy I have. Sorry, I apologize. Well, okay. Well, yeah, more people outside. Okay, good. Look, I'm happy. Next week we'll make more copies. Halacha is very important, right? Because it talks, and some of these things we'll talk about, and feel free to ask questions. We'll see come up literally. Ma'is and b'chol yom, things that come up, especially internet shopping nowadays, the halachas of it and the ethics behind it. Shalom, we're having a discussion on Erev Shabbos about if there's a separate thing between halacha and ethics. So we'll try to touch upon that. So let me show you a real case. We've heard the first source here. Kids clothing retailer defends return policy, singling out Orthodox neighborhoods. Ooh. Oh, yeah. You heard about this one? Yeah. On Wednesday, JTA reported that Shannon Toad, a high-end children's clothing retailer, had a very specific return policy. Customers could return non-sale items for a full refund, except for residents of 5 communities in New York and New Jersey, all of which have a significant Orthodox population. Those living in these zip codes include Brooklyn, Passaic, New Jersey, could exchange unworn items or return them for store credit only, a policy that some derided as discrimination against Orthodox Jews. Okay, so the story comes out, this is like 3 years ago on a Wednesday. In an email sent on Thursday, Shana Laub, the owner of the online shop, denied allegations her company's return policy was in any way discriminatory against Orthodox Jews. Thank you for the opportunity to explain my return policy and its genesis. Okay, that was last week's Parsha. And and hopefully repair both any damage done and my reputation. Okay. Laub emphasized her store accepted returns from all areas and that residents of these 5 areas could still return unworn clothes for store credit. She said she implemented the more restrictive return policy because, quote, the survival of the business had been threatened by abuse of its return policy among customers in a few concentrated areas. She continued, those customers would place large orders and return all or nearly all of the items they had purchased, often in poor condition and only after a substantial delay. So what do you think is happening when they're buying large things? They're being returned in a poor condition after a long period of time. They're using them. They're using the items and returning it back afterwards, right? According to Laub, mother of 5 girls on LinkedIn page lists living in the greater Los Angeles area, blogs that the company was started in Jerusalem, these mass orders would deplete her stock and affect her ability to process other orders, which proved destructive for her small business. If I continued to offer returns to those neighborhoods, my business and my income would be destroyed.
So she's Jewish.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Shauna Laub, yeah, sounds nice. Start in Jerusalem, yeah. I don't. I'm assuming she is, right? She added she knew of other businesses that also implemented similar return policies out of concern for their fiscal well-being, right? She did not reply to a request for seeking follow-up comments. She also claimed that since the release of the story and her company's return policy, she has, quote, experienced a firestorm of legal accusations, public humiliation, and a host of the most vile and vituperative email and phone messages. So do you... Yeah, right? Good. What other stores? What other stores have similar types of policies to prevent against abuse? Land's End. Right, like you said? Yeah, right? Shalom was talking about that, that used to be for their backpacks, right? You had a lifetime... For all the stuff, and now they had to change it. And they explained why they changed it, because people were taking advantage of their policy. So that's the question now. In halacha, if you're allowed, if there is a return policy, are you allowed to use that if you're basically violating the ethics behind it, right? So on a technical reason, companies, it's very good to have... a welcome, good return policy. And it's not set up for these people who are going to place mass orders, use them, and then bring them back. It's set up for the person who used the product, was unsatisfied with whatever it was, and needed to, and so they have a helpful and easy return policy. That being said, Sean pointed out to me something else. I remember, I'm sure many of you also, there used to be, I'm dating myself, on tape cassettes. Oliver Shalom, tape cassette. But on CDs, it said that it's Osir, Isir Hasagas Gavul Yadua. That it's known there's a prohibition against making any copies of these CDs and tapes. So Shalom told me that there was somebody who really took that to the letter of the law, and he was a chacham. He realized, what does that mean? If you make a copy, if you buy a CD and you copy it, you have effectively retroactively now nullified the sale, right? Sale's not good because it was sold on condition you're not going to copy it. So if you make a copy of it, then the sale becomes nullified. So what he did was he bought apparently over 1,000 CDs, copied them all, and then goes back to the store. Galpaz in Eretz Yisrael. I looked it up online. It has like 4 or 5 different locations in America and in Eretz Yisrael. He goes back to the store. He says, I copied all these things. So therefore, according to their stipulation, the sale is void and you have to refund me. Right? He was right. According to the way it says, right, he was the first one to make this chop. That if that's the, it's almanas kain. We'll see some mishnayos to discuss that in a few minutes. If you, the sale has a condition attached to it and you violate the condition, so then the whole thing becomes bottled. They have to take back the CD. So he halachically beat the system. Ethically, it's totally wrong. That wasn't the whole point. The point was not to do this, but he realized that's why nowadays when they sell these things, they stop printing it on the CDs. Tape cassettes, they stop selling. But on the CDs, they don't print these things. I think Mordechai Ben David or Avram Fried, they used to say, like, please do not play on Shabbos and Yom Tov. They used to have those on their on the things. But that's the whole point about using what are the halachas and the ethics behind purchasing everything. And specifically, since most purchases, not all, but most purchases are done online, so that's what we'll explore this morning, right? Last thing on the top of the next page. If I unwillingly insulted or hurt anybody, I sincerely ask forgiveness now. I never intended to. I was merely trying to survive. So if this person's parnassa is being threatened because of an abuse of their return policy, so are they allowed to protect themselves? Are the people still entitled to a refund? And you know what factors we'll consider now would entitle a person to getting refunds and doing. So we'll start with what it says in Shulchan Aruch, in Choshen Mishpat. There are 4 sections to Shulchan Aruch. There's the Aruch Chaim section, which deals with laws of daily life. There's the Yoredeya section, which deals with Isser Veheter. There is the Evan Ezra section, which deals with marriage, relationships between men and women. And one of the sections, the 3rd section, is Choshen Mishpat, which we're going to learn from right now. This is the law, civil law, like businesses, damages, courts, who's allowed to be testifying, who's allowed to be a judge, etc. like that. So it begins the Shulchan Aruch and says as follows. Hamoichi lechavero min mimini peros. So you're selling somebody some produce. V'nosenlo min acher, and you don't sell him what he is buying. See, he's buying oranges, and you sell him apples. Ein kan mecher. There is not the halacha does not recognize a transaction ever place. That's what's called a mekach tos. It's a false sale. There's no ushnehim, and both the seller and the purchaser, yoichlin lachzor behem. They're allowed to go back and renege on the deal. Ketzad, what would be an example? This machlo chitim levenos, he's selling him white chitim venimsu adumos, and you sell them, it really comes red. Or ipkar, you tell him I'm selling you red ones, you sell them the white ones. O yain, you're selling wine venimsa chome, it's really it's vinegar. O ipkar, the opposite, I'm selling you vinegar, and I really give you wine. O eitzim shel zesim, I'm giving you olive wood venimsu shel shikman, there's sycamore wood. O ipkar, so you're selling, you're giving them one thing, and you deliver something else. So then that's called a mechach tos in halacha, and the sale is void. Aval, but says the Shulchan Aruch, imach lochitim yafos nimtzu ros. If you're selling him good wheat, and included in that is inferior ones as well. Now, I guess this doesn't mean wheat. It means any. You're selling jackets. I'm buying a bulk order. I'm buying 10 jackets, and 2 of them are no good. Lokeach, the one who's buying, yochel lachserbo afilu lo nis'ana b'skum. Even if there wasn't any price fraud, you're still allowed to renege, because I was under the impression I'm buying, you know, high quality stuff or whatever it is, or wearable stuff, and it's defective, right? That's what it means. You sold bad ones. The hamocher, and the one who did sell it, any yochel lachserbo afilu hukra, and either they got, you know, the product became more rose in price, he could have made a bigger profit, he's not allowed to renege. The im machelo raos, but the opposite. He's selling bad ones, nimsu yafos, and really, like, I'm selling you low quality stuff, and it turns out there's a few good ones in there. Avila nozlan skum, even if, again, there's no price fraud involved, moicher yachel lachsubo. The seller is allowed to to pull back. See what I mean? He thought he was selling him low quality stuff. He ends up selling him a high quality thing. Says the Shulchan Aruch that the seller, the mocher, is in fact allowed to pull out.
And the buyer is still allowed to, or not?
The buyer doesn't want to pull out. He wouldn't want to. I'm paying $10, and I got a $50 item. I want to pull out. I want to hold on to the item, right? So if I'd ask, what role does intent play over here in a sale? I have a lawyer here. Oh, we'll get to that. Was it ever mentioned? So yeah,
quality of class.
Yeah. Well, it's a good question. Right now, it doesn't seem like actually. We'll come up to in a minute about when they actually specify what I am selling you.
So the whole lot is just a few items in the package.
You're buying a few packages. No, it doesn't have to be a huge amount. It doesn't have to be hundreds. It could be five or six, mm-hmm. right? But
one's in good.
Yeah, one's are good, or one's very good. The opposite, right? You know, so intent to a certain thing does matter, right? What you thought you were getting when you were making the purchase. Right. If you look in the Rambam, in the next source, Hilchos Gezela, says Hashoel Shalomidas Habaylin. If you borrow something without asking, according to the Rambam, Hareza Gazlin, you're a thief. So before about Shalomidas, without asking. So you see a pen lying on the floor or lying there, and you just take it and use it without asking. Right, you see someone's sitter. Now, for mitzvah items, it's a little bit of a different topic, but the Gemara says in the beginning of Pesach, I think in Daf Dalid, the Gemara says that people like when you use their property for mitzvahs. Is that like, it's talking all there about Bedikas Chametz. Okay, so, but so like if I don't have a pair of tefillin to use and I borrow yours, that's not really called a Geneva, because it's not Gazela, because I'm happy. I'm happy to use my mitzvah item. Your question about Sfarim or not, because maybe they're going to get damaged by you using them. But I don't want to get into that. Let's just talk about our case about the person. Let's say they're buying these clothing, right? So they didn't really buy it. That's a shoel. They were borrowing it. They borrowed it, right? And then I returned it.
In this case, right?
So that's a shoel shlomidas bailim hareza gazlin. According to halacha, that's stealing. Now, I think we could distinguish between whether you're buying something originally with the intent of keeping it, and then you were not happy with it, or you're dissatisfied, or it turned out it wasn't made of high quality, and you want to return it. Okay, that's what the policy is there for. But lichat chile be thinking, I'm going to buy this item, right? I'm not going to take off the tags. I'll wear the dress, but I'll tuck the tag in, so no one will see me wearing it. And then I'll return after the chasana, after the simcha, after the bar mitzvah. Then I will go and return it. That's gazela. That's stealing, right? Clearly, one is not allowed to do that, right? You see here, the fancy affair, and they tuck in the labels. So let's go on to something about a case where this happened as well. Name's been changed to protect to protect. Mr. and Mrs. Goldberg have joined the crowd and sell online. Their field is antiques and other collectibles. Unlike most other things being sold, these are often rare and don't have a clear market value. Not long ago, they agreed to sell an object for a set price and receive payment via PayPal. Right? You were asking me earlier about when an online internet transaction, when is the kitten actually made. However, just before they shipped the object, they found out they made a significant mistake, and instead of being worth $150, it was worth somewhere between $3,000 and $4,000. Okay, so that's a little bit of a mistake. That's a little bit of onah, price fraud. Mr. Goldberg came to ask his rabbi if he's permitted to go back on the deal, since it was all based on error, and this is a lot of money. So what would you say, before we get into any sources now, you thought you're selling something for $150, and it's really worth over $3,000. Can I pull, I'm the mocher, I'm selling it, am I allowed to say I'm sorry?
Yeah, go ahead.
No, you tell me. What?
So I've been in the antique business, so I mean, here you're in a separate, versus a face-to-face transaction.
Yeah.
You're like in this PayPal business, I don't know if this is added dimension, you're in separate places and there's time involved. It's not like, you know, you go to Grasso and you buy something and you give it over. You go to some department.
Would it make a difference if it's a garage sale? I go to a garage sale and I see an antique and it's priced for $150. And I'm
you know, I don't want to, you know what? I mean, as long as no money changed hands.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sell it to you. You know, you say, I got to go get my car to get the, come back and.
What if we shook hands on it, but no money?
That's an agreement then.
That's an agreement. Tekiyas kaf, right? Okay, so we'll see the Mishnayos to discuss this. What does our lawyer say?
Is this based on the Shulchan Aruch we said before? Is this Machalai Rois Venimtsu Yafo? So it's not really. We said that if it's inferior and it turns out to be better, then Mochi Yochalachzor.
Oh, so Mochi Yochalachzor, right? If I thought I'm selling you a $150 item, it's nice, but it's not like, ooh, ah, ah. It turns out it's a very thousands and thousands of dollars. So Lechor, that's what the case in Shulchan Aruch, that I'm selling you something and I didn't realize what it was. That my intent would never. I would never willingly sell an expensive item for that price, right? So maybe you would be able to pull back, right? Okay. Good. So now we'll come to Joey's question as to when does that kinyan actually happen? Now, in the internet sales, we'll have a different class developed that about kinyanim. Can you make internet sales on Shabbos? Do you have to close down your site for Shabbos? How does it work with Grama and many, many different things to consider when we talk about internet sales? But let's avoid the internet kinyan for a minute just to talk about a basic kinyan. You're at the garage sale, you're in the store, you want to buy an object. So this is a Mishnah in the beginning of Zahav. I think it was at the fourth parak in Bava Metzia. So this is in the middle of the Mishnah. It says like this, the next source. Ketzad. Moshe chemenu peiros. Belonosun ma'os. So if they've... A kinyan mashiach means you've pulled the item. Right? So I have the produce, I have the thing, but I did not yet give the money. Eino yochel lachzor. Neither the seller or the buyer is allowed to renege once he's done a mashicha. He's pulled the item. He's lifted it up. Nosen lo ma'os. If all he did was give the money, v'lo mashach emenu peiros yochel lachzor. Then at that point, either person can pull out. If all that's happened is the money has exchanged hands. So then, at that point, we say the ma'os konos is the money doesn't really make a kinyan on a deraisa level. It's only on a rabbinic level. But on a deraisa level, that no transaction has really happened. I don't own it yet. You haven't sold it to me just by giving over the money. So you technically could pull out. But here's our parsha connection. Aval omru, but we say, the chazal say on a person like this, amisha pora. A curse. The one who cursed me'anshe dor ha'mabel, right? The generation of the flood, me'anshe dor ha'floga, and the dispersion of the tower, who also liparim me'misha eina oime b'diburo. The Hashem will also curse you and take retribution on you for not keeping your word. So technically speaking, yeah, it's allowed. I could pull out, but you get a misha para. You get a curse for doing such a thing.
But this is... Regardless of whether there's an error or not? Or
No. This is just a regular. We had an agreement, and not that it was a makach taos. There was no mistake. I just changed my mind. I'm reneging on our agreement, right? Yes. You look for the main point. Even the deal has not yet gone through, and technically a person could back out. The sages have extremely harsh words for that type of person. Right? If you think about it, what was the whole point of Dor HaMabel? What did they do that was technically wrong? So you know the famous Chazal tells us that it was the Gezel. They stole, but they stole in an ingenious sort of way. They stole with something that had a very small market value, Pachas Mishava Pruta, so that you couldn't take a person to Beis Din for such a small amount. You know, I teach in Chumash class, the Parshas Noach, so I give an example. Imagine a guy has a candy store, right? He's got like a barrel full, like a jacuzzi size full of jelly beans, and everybody walks by and takes one jelly bean. So you can't take a person to Beis Din for one jelly bean, even for the red ones, which are geschmack. You can't collect one jelly bean. So everybody lines up and takes one little thing. That's Chazal says the person had a fence, and they each one took a little wood splinter and used that, right? And by the end of the day, this guy's completely wiped out, but he has no legal recourse because you can't go after Pachim Shapuda. So that was what the Gezar Din was based upon. That's what they got punished for because of this. I beat the system. Halachli, you don't have any tainas on me. No, Mishapara. So here you technically could follow the letter of the law, right? Like the guy who returned all these CDs at Galpaz, right? He followed the letter of the law, but the whole morality behind it, the ethics behind it is completely missing, right? Which is a discussion. Could you have such a thing as ethics existing outside or separate from the halacha? But here clearly the Mishnah tells us that the Chazal frowned highly upon this type of behavior. So we'll put it back. What about the person who's buying these coats, buying these items in advance, al-manas, they know they're going to return them after they wore it. So 100% that's prohibited. It's 100% prohibited. Again, we're not talking about a person who wore the coat and it started to fray after one or two wearings. It's like, okay, that's defective merchandise. It's not high quality. You can turn it back. But to do something, lichatchil, to know about that. Okay, the story of Usha. Not Usha in the Gemara, but Usha, an Asian American woman who was selling her house in an increasingly Jewish neighborhood. She accepted an offer, had her lawyer send in a contract to the buyer. The buyer signed it, returned it with a 10% payment. At that time, the house is, quote, under contract, and she stopped showing it to other potential buyers. While the buyer never explained why he didn't want to go through with the deal, and even though he's shown a pre-approval for a mortgage, he somehow, quote, arranged to be rejected by the bank and was able to withdraw from the deal, getting his money back, having caused Usha to waste months when she could have found another customer and gotten on with her life and moved as she wanted. It was later found out the truth was that he backed out because he wanted to flip the house for a quick profit, but realized that he could not be able to, so then he pulled out. He wasn't honest, right? So he had this whole scheme to do this. Finally, Usha found another buyer, followed the same procedure, and about a week before this date set for the closing, the fellow also announced he didn't think he'd be able to go through the deal. However, this guy foolishly announced he didn't think he had the money, even though originally he had documentation that he did have enough money. The truth was that he only wanted his house as an investment, and meanwhile he found a more attractive investment instead. So here's two real-life stories about people who had done this. By this time, Usha really had enough. Turning to her Jewish real estate broker, she wondered what kind of ethics these folks have. Aren't they also religious? Sad, but fortunately she was somewhat surprised given that the broker herself is so ethical in all of her financial dealings. It's not an internet sale, but it's about backing out of a deal, often with dishonesty, and it illustrates just why the Chazal saw this behavior as so bad. When people behave like this and act this way, what do the Umma Sa'olam think when they see the way that people do that? Okay, so now let's move on to the next one about this Misha Parah. So now, again, quoting from the same area, but the Orach HaShulchan. So the Orach HaShulchan is not the Shulchan Orach. Sometimes people get confused because the names are so similar. The Shulchan Aruch is written by Rabbi Yosef Karo in the late 16th century, 1570s or so. The Aruch HaShulchan is written in the 1800s by the Nevordiker, of Epstein. So the Aruch HaShulchan is a fantastic halachic source, and he, in his commentary in the Choshen Mishpat section, discusses this. He says, Kizeh lo niskan ela b'makam she'ein hefsid. Right? Well, there's no loss involved. Rak shechoizba mepnei yukra. Bezula, right? Bezet tigna chazal mishapara. The reason we said when a person's just like, I got a better deal, so I'm backing out of this. I'm going to do it. But not because I'm actually going to lose. A person's going to lose on that, so then they're not, you know, mechuyev to stay involved in it if it's going to be a thing, right? That's the whole kind. She'ein hefsid rak shechoizba mepnei yukra.
That's the idea of it. So is
the
Aruch HaShulchan distinguishing Yafis v'nimtzu Ros, that if a buyer purchases something and it's more inferior than he thought, the quality was worse than he thought, so that is that the Aruch HaShulchan saying that there would be no Mishapara on that because there's Hefsid to the buyer?
Correct, I think so. Yeah. Right, I think so. Yes. Okay. Now, moving on. Is the seller supposed to be an expert? So now, in the same parak in Bava Metzia, Nun Aleph, Echad halokeach ve'echad hamoicher. Both from the lokeach, the one who is purchasing the item, and both on the side of the mocher, the seller of the item, yesh lehen ona. There is a problem if you have price fraud, which for the mocher would be to sell it extremely above the value, and for the lokeach to purchase something extremely below the value. Kishem she'ona lehedyo. It's just like for a commoner, right? You don't necessarily know the things. Kachi shana le tagar. Tagar is an expert, is a specialist. Rabbi Yehuda argues and says, no, ain ona le tagar. There is no price fraud when you are an expert. If you know what the price is on this, then you can't claim afterwards, oh, I was deceived. You're supposed to know what the fair market value is for this object that you're buying. So if Ben's going to buy a guitar, he's going to know exactly how much that guitar is really worth, and then he can say, oh, I got fooled, you duped me, I didn't know anything about this. So who do we follow? Do we follow his opinion that, no, both can claim price fraud, or no, that an expert does not? So in Shulchan Aruch, that's the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch, in the next source, Choshen Mishpat tells us, k'shem sheish onol lehed yot, just like there is onah for a commoner, right? Kach, so too, yeshana letagar, afa pishu baki. Even though he is an expert, he nevertheless can claim, right? So they can make a mistake. Even though they're the expert, they should have known better, they might have known better if there really was a price fraud. The halacha is that they're allowed to pull out. Onah is not binding if there's a thing. So that's if there's an honest mistake. But what if, unfortunately, people who are nefarious and they're planning on cheating people, they want to take advantage of unsuspecting customers. So the Rambam says over here, also lemoicher olakoyne lahonos.
So we onah, we say is deliberate.
Well, that if onah means the price was. Little technical about six, but it's unfair. It's either too much or too little, beyond the normal thing. You know, people can ask a different question. I think Rabbi Snow spoke once here by Shalash Sudis about how onah works into real estate. Real estate is that really a can you claim onah? You're paid above the market value. I don't know if this property to me is worth a certain amount that I'm willing to pay for it. Then it's above the market value, but for me, location, location, location. This is what I want, and I'm willing to pay beyond the market value for it in order to get what I want. So you had a discussion about that. So certain prices, too. Like by an auction, though we're going to come down in a second now, this auction, there's no real set prices by an auction, right? In other words, as we found out by Hakafos, right? it's what a person is willing to pay for it, right? So if... Jason Leff was telling me when I went to be Menachem Aval, he was telling me when his father, Bernie Leff, all of a sudden.
School story.
What?
The school story.
Yeah, yeah. You hear what happened? How with the maze, the high school that used to be local high school, South River. So Bernie Leff purchased the building. When you went, it was I don't know exactly all the profit, but apparently it went up to a silent auction to get it. Like the building was, there was a foreclosure or something. I may not be clear on that point, but whatever it was, he said he came to the bid with two checks, with two envelopes, right?
Wow.
Two envelopes. And if there were other bidders there, he had a check for $1 million. And if there was no one else there, he had a check for $300,000. Nobody else showed up to the silent auction, so he gave in the bid for $300,000, obviously, and he got the building. Okay, he worked out how he was able to have an investor, and it was halachically correct, and it was honest what they did, and he was able to get the money. There was no cheating or anything going on like that. But that's the whole case in point, right? That an auction doesn't have a set price, so you can't tie you overpaid for this, right? So back to our case about the guy who has the antiques. What do you mean? You paid $150 for it. So maybe someone else would have gone up to a $3,000 for it, but there was no set price here. You were supposed to be the expert in it, right? So if you look, I'm going to skip the Rambam for a minute. Let me go down to the next part where it says like this, right? Itmar, okay? Ha'oim lechaver amanas she'ein lov ona. Can you make a precondition to the sale that there's no price fraud involved? Meaning, you're agreeing to pay whatever. You can't come and claim, oh, I knew how much it was really worth, then I never would have paid that much for it, right? Can you make such a condition in advance, and if both sides agree to it, can they say, okay, then so maybe, yeah, maybe I did rip you off. Maybe I charged you three times what the actual value of it was, but since you agreed in advance, therefore, there's no fraud here. So it says, ha'oim lechaveiro almanas, this sale is good, almanas, and the condition ain't a law of onah. So that really skips onto nun alfam beis. Rav Omer lo kasha, kan bistam. One case we're talking about is where there is an unspecified, probably I'm not telling you anything, whether I'm overcharging you or not. Will you allow to back out? Kan, here in our case, be mefarish, I say explicitly, I'm overcharging you. There is onah on this, but you're not allowed to claim to me you want a refund. Detanya, bamed, devar memorim bistam. Aval, be mefarish, but if you say exactly, I'm overcharging, moicher sha'omar lokeach. If the seller says to the buyer, chafet zeh, this object, sha'ni moichelech, I'm selling to be mesayim. Right, it's worth $200. Yodea ni bo she'ena shava elamona, but I know it's really only worth $100. He tells him this explicitly. Right, it's worth this. This is what I'm selling you. Al manash she'ein lecha alai ona. Right, and I'm telling you the real prices. I'm specifying exactly what the real value is, what I'm charging for it, and the condition that the sale works is that there's no, you're not going to claim price fraud on me. Ein lo alav ona. He doesn't have it. You agree to it. You were, well, there was no, deception over here. There was no, it wasn't like cheating. It wasn't like, he's selling a car and he rolls back on the odometer the amount of miles that the car had. This was a clear cut, what we say, full disclosure, right?
He's got his Joe DiMaggio card and he likes it very much, but the other guy really, really wants
it. Right, he really wants it. So I'm willing to pay that. So the Gemara is saying two people doing business, they realize the price is way out of the norm, right? But he says that. So now that's good. Is that back to our auction now? Now, when you're doing an auction, when I'm willing to sell something, I don't know, you have on eBay, right? You're willing to sell something. So let's say I think my object, I know I'm selling. I'm selling my Joe DiMaggio. I'm selling my baseball card collection, right? Okay. And I think it's easily going to get $300. But I don't want to start the bidding at $300 because I think no one's going to do that. So I started at $50, figuring that people are going to, I get a big baseball collection. Someone will try to come in. And let's say no one else, I don't know how eBay works exactly, but no one else notices it. And it doesn't get up to $300. And really, at all, for all the bids come in, someone's going to pay $175. But you put your merchandise up there now, right? So the auction didn't have a set price. You could have gone much higher than 300, but it didn't. It went lower. So the person allowed to pull back and say, "Look, that wasn't the price I was looking for. Right? I didn't get what I wanted." So let's see the Shulchan Aruch now. Ha'omer lechavero. Now, if a person says to his partner, whatever it is, the guy he's billing, "Amanash ein lecha alai ona," right? That there is no yeshlo alav. Oh no! Bamedvar when bistam she'eni yadei kam ona v'yeshbo kidei shiyimcho. If you just say, if you don't tell him what the real prices are, you just say stam that we're having a deal here. I don't know what that means. So then he would be allowed to, right? I have a meforish, but if you tell him explicitly what the real price is and what I'm charging you, that case you do not have ona. So if the buyer knows and is told in advance, then you can't come back and claim that I was defrauded. I told you exactly. You weren't defrauded. You agreed to it. You're maskim, right? And no one forced you to do it. If you didn't want the Joe DiMaggio card, you don't have to pay for that, right? Okay, I'm going to skip the small for a second. We'll go back to what this whole story with is the about the auction, the PayPal. The seller was told by his rabbi that he could indeed back out, right? As Mary, you said, right? Because this is a case that the Shulchan Aruch says that when you think you're selling something for quality, it's poor quality, it turns out to be high quality, then even the mocha is allowed to pull back, right? And plan on doing so, they informed the buyer, who got most upset, as apparently the buyer on the other side of the country was also an Orthodox Jew, and with depression, it was against the Torah's morality to back out. He tied it to Mishapara. You had an agreement, and you're backing out, even when a gross error was made in pricing. The seller didn't wish to have a confrontation, went through with the sale. So he sells them. He thinks it's $3,000, $4,000. He sells it for $150, and they found out the error in price was not in the thousands of dollars, it was in the hundreds of dollars. So he went through, and he could have... What? Nishka Farrell. Nishka Farrell. I don't know, a few hundred, $500? Okay. Joey says Nishka Farrell.
Compared to the other
story.
Uh-huh. Okay. With the Chil Hashem.
I mean, I'm more so on the example of the real estate transaction.
Yeah.
But yep. There are help us regarding avoiding the Chil Hashem.
100%.
So where's the line there?
So, if it's a face-to-face transaction, they realize they're dealing with a Jewish person. So then that's much more problematic than an anonymous online thing. We don't know.
Right.
So, think, right. So let's say a case where...
But, I mean, the risk of it being somebody where Chil Hashem is applicable is greater when it's completely unknown.
Right. So then they should probably not back out if there's a risk of a Chil Hashem.
Okay. So what about the real estate scenario we paid before?
You're right. They shouldn't have done it. People acted inappropriately. They should not have done it. They were wrong. They were wrong. That's why we're here to learn the halacha. So what's the ones allowed to do, what's not? They didn't come to the Sunday morning shiur to find out that you're not allowed to behave in such a way. Yeah. So now we'll talk about a little thing about the internet and stuff like that about posting reviews and ratings and stuff like that, right? Have you ever bought something, gone to a restaurant, hired a worker, stayed in a hotel and been really unhappy? Perhaps you told the person or their boss, but today we have a, quote, better way. You post it online, you tell the whole world. Right? Very often it's done, a person will feel justified, they're telling themselves and their friends, they're doing this as a matter of principle. So my friend once gave a drasha. He says, there is no such thing as a matter of principle. Like when you're doing something like this, it's not a matter of principle. Don't fool yourself. Right? So the Chafetz Chaim outlines, when you want to speak Lashon Hara about a person or a business, there has to be 7 conditions that are met in order to do so. Now, this is so important. I used to have this as a bumper sticker in my car, on the front of the car, so I could read it while not while I was driving, but when I was at a red light. So what are the 7? So we'll go through all these and we'll talk about when a person wants to relate their experiences with a person or with a business. Number 1, shira ze hadavar ba'atzmo. You have to have firsthand experience. Not that somebody else told you about it, but you have to know firsthand what happened. V'lo ayidei shemiya me'achir. But not that it's secondhand. Oh, somebody else told me the food's no good at this restaurant. That's not good enough. V'im lo shnizbara lo achir kach hadavar emes. You have to have firsthand knowledge. Number 2. Zeu ma'od. Shizor ma'od. Be very careful. Shlo yachli tekef esa inyan bedas. You can't resolve it so quickly in your mind. What happened? Legez of a oshek, that something was robbed, somebody was mistreated, or lehezek, someone was damaged. Kiyotze behen. Rak yizbon in hatev. You have to look into it carefully. Im etzim ha'inyin hu alpidin bichlal gezel ohezek. Really, did something wrong actually happen here? So I'll give you an example. I was talking to high school kids, and they see somebody go into someone else's locker and pull out the $20 from their coat. Open the door, take that $20, and put it in their own pocket. Oh, you're a ganav, you stole. 1 second, not so fast. Do you really know the background behind what just happened here? Maybe the kid owed them $20 and said, oh yeah, go to my locker and you can go take it, right? Maybe person says, I have any money for lunch? Oh, you know what, I have money in my locker. You go take from my locker, you can borrow $20 to go buy yourself lunch. Lunch is expensive nowadays, $20. But whatever it is, you saw it happen. You can't go around and start blasting. Oh my goodness, I saw they're a ganav, they're a thief, they're a liar, they're a cheat. People are so quick, they fly off the handle. They're so quick to make condemning accusations without actually. So the second thing, first of all, you have to firsthand, and you have to act. Yeah, I saw it firsthand. I got the condition right. I saw it. 1 second, but you have the second condition is they have to know that something wrong actually happened. Just because you saw something happen doesn't necessarily mean that what happened was wrong. Number 3, you have to speak to the person directly in a soft way. So first, many people don't even bother to confront the owner or the manager. Instead, they just start, I got such terrible customer service at this place. Well, did you speak to them about it directly? In a soft way, instead of screaming and flying off the handle with them, did you speak to them directly before you went ahead and posted on your Facebook thing? 4, so yagdil ha'avlo, not to exaggerate the actual affront. What happened? Yoksi mashahi. They served me cold French fries. And not only that, the bathrooms were dirty. Da, 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 they start going on a whole tirade against everything wrong. Like it's the joke, right? These two people sitting say, yeah, the food here is disgusting. They go, yeah, I know. In such small portions also, right? you can't exaggerate what's happening here. Okay, that joke's older than me. 5, shechavin letoelus. The next thing, it's not that I'm just lashing on this person because I want to get them. I have a personal grudge against this person. The 5th condition is the Chafetz Chaim is that you have to be doing this to actually help. V'lo anos me'apagam shehu noisim b'chaver. Not you're going to get any, I'm going to benefit out of this. V'lo mitzad sinah sheyesh lo alav mikvar. Not because I previously don't like this person, and now is a chance to really get back at them. I go into their store. I had a business deal with them. Now I go ahead and tell everybody how terrible they are. Now they're going to suffer. 6. If you have a different way of solving the problem rather than posting Lashon Hara about them, if there's a different way of solving this without speaking about everybody, many times things can get solved through backroom negotiations. Doesn't have the conversations that have to happen in public in front of everybody. You can quietly take the person aside and speak to them about the topic that's what happened. And many times ways of solving without necessarily notifying the whole world about it. And then the last one is that they're not going to get excessive suffering as a result of what you did. Meaning, if let's say everything, the first six are all true. Halavai, you had no ill intentions. You just only wanted to help this person. You spoke to them privately. They didn't do it. That you had first-hand knowledge. Everything. Da, 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 da. But now, as a result of you speaking Lashon Hara about them, what's the reaction going to be? What are they? And this is very difficult to gauge. Shelo yisove val yidei hasipur hezek lehanidon yoser mikfi hadin. That he shouldn't get punished excessively as a result of this. Do you know how many people are going to respond when they see that that Lashon Hara? Like how many people, you post something about a local restaurant, about the local vod, about the local bagel shop, whatever it is. Do you know that only the right amount of things, halavai, you got all first six conditions correct. Do you know that every single person reading that is only going to respond in an appropriate way? So that's very, very difficult to grant all of these. Okay, with this, online ratings. How many stars are you going to give them? How many, what are you going to write, the comments about them? You know, it could be anything. It could be a plumber, it could be an accountant, it could be a restaurant, it could be, your landscaping, whatever it is when you put these things on. Jeff owned a nice kosher restaurant in New York City with the Board of Health rates restaurants A, B, C, pending, or F, closed. On one occasion, his restaurant received a B, not the greatest, but not the end of the world. Some community blog decided to make a major issue out of this, and for the next few months, his business suffered major losses, even though quickly addressed the concerns of the health department. So is that right? Is that ethical? That person got a B rating. So if you personally don't want to go into this restaurant, okay, no one's forcing you to go there, but now to start spreading this about the whole world, it could be true. Gotta be. Okay. But who knows? Who knows how that's going to affect a person's business in the future.
So is it different with an online rating when they're asking you to give them a number of stars? They say, okay, thank you for visiting our site.
Please no, that I think... That I think you're allowed to. If, right. If they're asking you for their online rating, now again, I think that the proprietor is allowed to respond to that.
Yes.
They're allowed to address...
I don't know. Generally, we try to respond when we get a letter.
Right.
Different platforms that have different setups.
Yeah.
So sometimes... If you're a seller and you haven't been using an existing platform, you're stuck using whatever rating system.
Like Yelp. There. Are you allowed, if they're on a business on Yelp, and you like, is a company allowed to respond to what they're rating? Yeah.
On Facebook, I'm pretty sure you can.
Yeah. Facebook, you can respond to anything, right?
Well,
no?
There's
Facebook business page is saying.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. How's that work?
I'm pretty sure the owner can reply.
Can reply.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I remember we were looking for our summer vacations, so my wife was looking at different hotels, so you look to see the ratings. And one hotel that we booked at got horrible ratings. every single complaint they got, felt like the drugs are being sold in the lobby, every single complaint that they got, they must have had somebody hired full-time to respond to every single one of these complaints, because everything, I don't like having the drugs being sold in the lobby. Thank you for your concern. We are working with the police department to correct this situation. I can't step outside in sandals because there's needles all over the floor. Yes, you're aware of this. We've hired a special task community to come in and sweep up the drug needles. Every single complaint they had, this person was like responding in a very polite, respectful way. Yes, we've addressed that concern.
It might have been true, and you can't remove bad enough. You can. I don't know.
They can bury them. They can bury them, right?
Yes, somehow you can't.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can ask Facebook whatever to remove it, and sometimes they won't remove it, and then it's stuck there. And
yeah. So Michael's question. I think you can respond. I mean, in other words, if there really is, they're asking for your honest feedback. I'm like, my doctor now sends me rate your experience in our dialogue.
Yeah.
Well, you have an obligation to avoid it, Lashon Hara, even if they're asking for you to rate it. Like, wouldn't you just bypass? If you can't say anything good, don't say anything at all.
Wait, Lashon Hara could be true. Lashon Hara could be true. Lashon Hara is true, right? If you say something that's false, that's a different. That's motzi shemra. That's a davar sheker tirchak. That's saying something false. Lashon Hara is true. Lashon Hara is something that's true. It still could be Lashon Hara, though, right?
You have nothing good to say, and I'm saying, is there some bypassing anything?
Yeah, we generally don't, that's, if you don't have anything good to say, we don't do it. There are times, that's a separate question as to when Lashon Hara is allowed to be, if a person's going to suffer as a result, and you need to tell them, like, for a shidduch. So let's say there's something about, there's a major health issue that you know about, and the other side doesn't. and they come and ask you, you know, about that. So then that's something that needs to be divulged. If the person is going into a business and the partner who they're wishing taking on is dishonest, and they come and ask you, that's something that needs to be divulged. Is it Lashon Hara? Yes, but Lashon Hara is allowed to be spoken for a toelis, right? That's not what we are talking here, but yeah, for online ratings, if they're asking, again, you can't exaggerate, but if something happened, you know, I asked for room service and it took 4.5 hours to bring me a new towel. I guess you could say that, right? It doesn't reflect so well on them, but they're asking for their thing. You could do that. Here's another issue. Talk about online shopping, right? Or I know Reed had a question came up to me last year about a car. It's the same thing. Can you go to one store, ask them all your information questions, and then you knew already you weren't going to buy by them. You were going to buy them, right?
Can you go to Best Buy and...
Ring the salesman like a sponge to get all the information out of him and then now go buy it online, right? those things, right? So let's see what it says. The Shulchan Aruch says like this. Ketzad hi onas devarim. Now, ona, it's the same words we were talking before. That was like a price. But here it's about painting someone through words. Lo yomer bekam ata roitze litein chafed ze vehu eina roitze liknoso. By asking somebody, oh, how much are you selling this for? And you have no intention to doing it. So kids are asking me, well, what do you mean? What if I really just want to know how much the price is because I might buy it? Okay, that's different. If there is a thing, someone's telling me. This girl says my father goes to the car dealership, finds out all the information, and then goes to his the guy he leases from. So I said, you can't do that. So what would be the following? What if they tell him in advance, like, I usually have a guy that I do my leases from, but if you can make me a deal also, then I'll give the business. I think that's fine because you're giving the, you're not, there's no Ganevis Das over here that you're giving that you're telling him. It's fair competition. I have somebody else who can give me a deal. If you can give me a deal also, I'll lease the car from you. That I think is fair. But to have zero intention, the Shulchan Aruch clearly says that's prohibited.
I personally find that when I go into stores and I tell folks that I have zero intention of buying from them, but if they don't mind, I wanted to ask them a few questions.
Yeah.
I find almost 100% of the time they are willing to
converse
anyway.
Right, it's true. Yeah.
Oftentimes they're willing to match the internet price.
Right. They'll say, I'll match the device. So if you're only going in just to get the information, then that's not allowed, right? But if you're, you know, shopping around, and then and this is one of the places you're shopping is in the store, then that would be fine, right? Oh, she'ein lo domim. You have no money. El shkvaso lahatos es chavero. Fachakach shlo yikne yakir chavero shnischavin lahatoso v'yetzelo. Right? He's. That's an exact example. You had no money. Right? You go into a store. You don't have a credit card. You don't have any cash on you, and you start looking around for all these things. So the salesman doesn't realize that they think that they have a potential customer here. Now, many times in I'll give you an example. Like sometimes when people have professional services, they're willing to answer your questions because you might be a potential client. Right, later on down the line, like, I'm willing to spend time with you now and talk to you and answer your questions. I know that you're not necessarily hiring me, but like that's a gesture of goodwill. It's building up my business. I'm happy to do that. I have a good reputation, whatever it is. So that's necessarily that would be allowed. But to try to to squeeze them and get all the information, you have zero intention. 100% usser. So yeah. Okay, you don't have to no mechila. Well, we're gonna end it. But let me just one last case here. A small part's missing, and they sent me a whole new item, right? You know, I think we have in our shed 6 microwave doors. It was missing, like the door was broken or something, and they just kept sending them to us, and we called them. I also have smoke alarms, if anyone needs some smoke alarms. We have a pack of smoke alarms. We bought them, and then there was something wrong with them. They wouldn't accept them back. So this is if they're not, you have no chiv to return something. They say I'm not taking. We don't need it. They're restocking. We can't use it. Da da da. It's like that. I'll give you another example. This I didn't know about that. If you buy a car seat online, they will not take it back. They'll take it back. They won't reuse it. Right. So I remember we bought several car seats, and it says you have a return policy. So okay, my kids do this all the time. If there's a return policy, you're allowed to accept it back. So they'll instead of shopping in the store, they shop online. They buy three different pairs of shoes, size 7, size 8, size 9, whatever it is. And one of them fits best. That's when they're allowed to return the other two. For the car seats, though, they will accept it back, but they get destroyed. Because of legal issues, they will not ever reuse an opened car seat. They don't know if it was tampered with or anything like that. Right.
They should have passed it on.
They don't pass it on, so they'll accept it back. But then you realize the company suffers a loss. So I wouldn't have bought them if I know they weren't going to use it. I just figured that they'll reuse it. So now here's the question like this. Is this the standard way of doing things, or did I mislead them, and that's why they're sending me the brand new, the full product, instead of just the missing piece? Says Shulchan Aruch HaRav. This is from the Baal HaTanya. The first Lubavitcher Rebbe wrote the code of Halacha. The Lubavitcher Rebbe lived, I think, 1745 to 1812. And he was a genius in Halacha. So he writes a code, Aval Oser La Toiso Bein Meshivi Mekach Bein Becheshmen. You're not allowed to fool them, whether you're talking about the price of it or how many you got. V'chein kol mirma, any deception, Shabbat Olam, Osaba Mekach Umemkar. You're never allowed to be deceptive about that by telling them, oh, the whole thing didn't work. Or you have to be very clear exactly if you're returning a product, what exactly is wrong with it, right? And then they'll decide what they want to do, whether they're going to give you a new or they're just going to send that part. Kigon, Im Yesh Mumba Mekach Tzorek Lahodil Alokeach. If you're selling something, let's say you're selling a car, you have to tell the buyer there's a dent in the bumper or the whatever. You have to inform them. You can't just say anything. You have to let them know. I remember once hearing from Rabbi Barrel Bell. He said, you can't even wash your car beforehand to make it look more attractive than it really is. I don't know. Such an idea. Shahar zeh mateu, it fools him. The goynev daito, it's gnevis das. Im ein amodin, if you don't inform them. If you tell them, yeah, by the way, the clutch is slipping and all these other problems. Okay. Harei zeh ki goynev imenu mamon v'osim in hator. It's an issur d'oraisa to mislead a potential buyer. So this is very important. When doing these types of internet transactions or just in general, both on the side of the seller or not. So the last page says, what if I confuse them by calling each day and I told them it didn't arrive, so they send me another one? Or two different members of the family called up to complain. They didn't realize it was a husband and wife or it was a parent, right? And they think that there's more than one item, they send multiple ones. So if it's done a mekach, not a mekach, what's what I'm looking for? Unintentionally, tos akum, they unintentionally make a mistake. Me'ikr hadin, it's not required to, but this is an opportunity for a tremendous kiddush Hashem that you can cause by returning it. If they again, you have to inform them. If they're sending back more than, again, if they're moichalan, they say we don't want it, or that keep it, that's fine. But you have to let them know if they would give you more than that. I remember once something happened. I forget where it was. Car thing or something like that, and the other person's insurance sent me a duplicate check. So I here's a great chance to do it. So I got on the phone with the person. I said to them, I'm Jewish, and that's why I'm letting you know I'm returning this check. I don't know if I had to do that, but I wanted to try to make the biggest kiddush possible. But I don't know. Maybe they probably weren't listening anyway. But that's an important thing to do. So there's the halachos clearly, which we tried to outline there, but there's also the ethics behind it that you cannot. You cannot mislead someone, even if you could find a technical loophole. That's not encouraged at all. We have to be erlich, as we spoke about many times. There's the letter of the law, but there's also the spirit of the law. That the halacha can't tell us every single prop what to do in every single location, but that the Ramban writes kedoshin tihiyu, to lead a life of kedusha, to be erlich and to know hatova hayasher, to do what's necessarily right and even what's yashrus. And especially when there's any concern of a chil Hashem, one has to go beyond the letter of the law to avoid any possible. Any possible chilul Hashem that some of these terrible cases we discussed, but even in basic human interactions, just being a mensch and doing the right thing, and if there's an error made, to inform them, even when Taos Akum, even by the letter law, is not required to do that. There's a very big brach that's given to a person who goes beyond the letter law and returns the mistake that the non-Jew made. Okay, Shkoyach everybody, thank you for coming. So we'll continue next week as well.
Yeah, we'll be next week.